Welcome to the Government Contracts Legal Roundup, a podcast focusing on important developments facing government contractors and grant recipients. I'm David Robbins, and I'm your host for this edition. We have a couple of interesting regulatory updates for you to start off this edition. First, the OFCCP, that's the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, has announced a new contractor portal where contractors and subcontractors must register and certify their compliance with the Affirmative Action Program requirements. June 30th of this year is the deadline to submit initial certifications. After that, annual certifications will be required. Now, this is a change in the way business is done, so people need to be aware of it. We also have a change in how contractors are identified in government databases. For years, the DUNS number had been the way to go, but now, after a number of years of study, the government has stopped using Dun & Bradstreet's Data Universal Numbering System, DUNS number, to identify contractors. In its place, the government has transitioned to Unique Entity Identifiers, or UEIs. Contractors with existing system for award management registrations and archive registrations have been assigned UEIs and will need to begin using that number. New registrants inside SAM, forgive me, will need to request a UEI through SAM. In the past, they'd have to seek out their D&B number first and then start the SAM registration. Now it's all done through SAM. So a change in the way things are done. And then a change in the way we get paid. GSA published an acquisition letter recently, which announces a temporary moratorium on GSA enforcement of certain limitations of contractors' ability to seek economic price adjustments. What does that mean? You know, sometimes you bid a government contract, you put in a price you think is good, your costs increase sometimes dramatically, and you're stuck. That's one of those truisms of government contracts. You're stuck. There had been limitations on the way contractors, especially those on the GSA schedule, could seek price increases. But GSA is not enforcing that rule. GSA cited inflation and supply chain concerns as the reason for the moratorium, and they noted that contractors are removing items from the federal supply schedules to avoid selling them to the government at a loss. So GSA is now going to permit more frequent requests for price adjustments, and it will make it easier for government acquisition professionals to approve such requests as well. So heads up, GSA contract holders, you can get paid more to help cover those increase in costs. Moving on to protest cases, and the general theory here is the government gets it right once in a while. In Spatial Front Inc., a decision that was published April 5th, but came out and decided redacted fashion March 7th, GAO decided a protest challenging as unduly restrictive the terms of a solicitation issued by the Department of Commerce for enterprise-wide IT services. Specifically, the protester alleged that the requirement to possess a top secret facility clearance was unduly restrictive and had an unreasonable impact on small businesses. Well, just on its face, doesn't that sound silly? Well, maybe not, right? The protester, a small business, argued that because only a limited number of task orders were likely to require that facility clearance, the requirement was unnecessary and unreasonably restricted competition. All right, that sounds more reasonable. But GAO didn't buy it. They found the agency reasonably justified the restrictive provision, including ample market research demonstrating that a significant number of small businesses could indeed meet the FCL requirement. So that was well within the agency's discretion and denied the protest. Now, agencies are generally afforded discretion to determine their needs and the best means of accommodating those needs. Where a requirement touches on matters of national security, especially, just like in this case, an agency has the discretion to define solicitation requirements to achieve not just reasonable results, but the highest possible reliability and or effectiveness. And that was from the decision itself. And Veterans Choice Medical Equipment, this one, strangely, decided late October, but finally published at the start of this month, GAO denied a protest challenging the Department of Veterans Affairs award of a contract for in-home oxygen and ventilator services. The protester alleged that the agency unreasonably evaluated the awardee's corporate experience because the awardee's proposal lacked a reference contract containing all the required explanatory information. Further, the source selection authority and another evaluator relied on their personal knowledge of the awardee's experience that was not included in proposal. GAO found no basis to sustain. They denied the protest. The solicitation's proposal submission instructions afforded the agency discretion to consider experiences that did not conform to the submission requirements. And GAO found nothing improper with the evaluators considering corporate experience not found in the awardee's proposal and where they had their own knowledge. We see decisions over the years wrestling with this close at hand doctrine, right? It's not a remedy to failures to include required information in a proposal. The burden is on the offeror to submit a well-written proposal. It's just that the agency shouldn't have to ignore their own close-at-hand reasonable experience. They can include that in the evaluation. And with that, we'll close this edition of the Government Contracts Legal Roundup. If you have any questions about any of this, please call. I'm 202-639-6040. My email's drobbins with two Bs at jenner.com. See you next month.